to the headlines, Israeli forces once again raid the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, killing two Palestinians and critically injuring several more. Russia holds Ukraine security services responsible for the death of a prominent war blogger in St. Petersburg. The UK passport office workers launch a 5-week walkout as teachers overwhelmingly vote for further strikes over pay. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. In the occupied West Bank, the people of Nablus have held a funeral for two Palestinians killed in an Israeli morning raid. Several others were also injured in the incursion. The Israeli army says its forces arrested two people over a drive-by shooting that wounded two soldiers last month. The Lion's Den, a newly formed resistance group active in the West Bank, says one of the Palestinians killed on Monday was its member. The group says that he was killed while battling Israeli troopers. The second Palestinian was a member of Fatah. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has also reacted, saying that such murders will not stop Palestinians from defending their nation and their sanctities. Our correspondent Mona Kendall earlier joined us to tell us more about the Israeli army's raid on the city of Nablus.
This morning, Israeli forces raided Nablus city and clashes erupted as usual every time Israeli troops raid overcrowded Palestinian areas. At the end of the operation, at least two Palestinians were killed, according to Palestinian paramedics. The two were identified as two Palestinians were killed. They were identified as Mohammed Qatouni Halaq and Mohammed Abu Bakr Jnedi from Nablus. The Lion's Den group immediately issued a statement saying that its members had been engaged in the clashes that took place early today with the Israeli forces who stormed Nablus city. Israeli military issued a statement also saying the main aim of the operation to Nablus city was to arrest Palestinians identified as those Palestinians had took part in the shooting attack that took place over a week ago at the Hawara military checkpoint, the entrance of Nablus city, and led to the injury of two Israeli soldiers. They were seriously wounded over a week ago. The Israeli soldiers claimed that during this operation, they succeeded to arrest Az Tuqan and Nidal Tabanja. They were involved in the shooting that took place at the Hawara military checkpoint over a week ago.
Palestinian activist and writer Ghada Karmi says the escalation of Israeli atrocities against Palestinians point to a grand plan in the works.
Look, I think these people, extreme as they are, and some people even think they're crazy, but nevertheless, they are to be taken seriously. There's no doubt about it, because I think there's been a decision taken at some level by Israel that the time has come to deal with the Palestinian threat as they see it for good. And that means expulsions, ethnic cleansing, terrorizing people into fleeing, all of that should be expected. It's already happening. And that has to be taken seriously. It's not a passing phase. I greatly fear, however, and I don't want to be unduly pessimistic, but I'm going on past evidence that Israel seems to be able to commit extraordinary crimes against the Palestinians and others. It's not just Palestinians, it's Syrians as well, and the Lebanese as well. It's able to do that without being materially affected. Now, what I mean by that is, yes, Western states, America has been emboldened to criticize, to warn, to say, you know, go easy. But they won't sanction Israel. Now, unless you sanction Israel, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
And by the way, we're living at a time where we have the parallel of Ukraine, the Ukraine war, where Western states have not hesitated to support the Ukrainians who have been the victims in this war. They haven't hesitated to put in draconian sanctions on Russia. Where is the parallel action with Israel?
Israel has carried out several airstrikes against Syria during the past week. The Israeli regime claims the attacks are meant to stop Iran's growing influence in Syria. Tehran, however, says its military officers are on an advisory mission in Syria at the invitation of Damascus.
The Israeli regime has carried out yet another airstrike in Syria, this time targeting positions in the western city of Homs. A war monitoring group said explosions rocked the city and fire broke out in a research center. The Syrian military said the country's air defense intercepted several missiles, but the strike injured several soldiers and caused some material damage. The Sunday strike near the city of Homs was Israel's third such attack since last week. The regime carried out two separate attacks near the capital Damascus on Thursday and Friday. Syria was soon to react. In a statement, the Syrian foreign ministry slammed what it called fascist Israeli military attacks, saying the regime is in close coordination with terrorist groups to prolong the crisis in the Arab country. Iran's Revolution Guards Corps, which lost two of its members in Friday's attack, warned Israel of a crushing response. In a statement, the IRGC said, quote, "The crimes of the fake and criminal Zionist Israeli regime will not go unanswered, and it will pay." Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani condemned the attack, saying the blood of the high-ranking martyrs will not go waste and that Tehran reserves its right to respond at the appropriate time and place. This comes as the regime in Tel Aviv argues that it carries out attacks in Syria to prevent Iran's growing presence. Syria, however, says military cooperation and arms program with Iran are part of a decades-old strategic partnership to withstand Israel's long-term threats. Iran says its officers serve as an advisory role in Syria at the invitation of Damascus. Syria has sent numerous letters to the United Nations calling on the world body to intervene and put an end to Israeli attacks, but almost all those calls have fallen on deaf ears. The international community has failed to even blame the Israeli regime for the losses inflicted on Damascus.
The surge in Israeli attacks in Syria seems to be coming at a time when the regime in Tel Aviv is feeling numerous threats to its existence. That includes the Arab world's increasing engagement with Damascus and Tehran's recent rapprochement with Riyadh. But will Israel manage to derail such developments?
The latest Israeli airstrikes in Syria's Homs is the regime's seventh such attack in March, which is an indication that the regime
has been raising
the number of its aggressions against Syria. But why is the regime increasing the number of its attacks? First and foremost, what seems to be the case is the fact that the Arab world is increasing its engagement with the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. From Egypt to Saudi Arabia, each country has its own reason to resume relations with Damascus. Egypt has set up contacts with Assad, with both sides having agreed to strengthen cooperation during their first official visit by a Syrian foreign minister to Cairo, which is unprecedented in over a decade. According to Egyptian sources, the visit was aimed at putting in place steps for Syria's return to the Arab League through Egyptian and Saudi mediation. Meanwhile, Riyadh and Damascus have reached an agreement to reopen their embassies after the Muslims' holy month of Ramadan. Saudi Arabia says it is planning to invite Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to an Arab League summit that Riyadh is hosting in May. Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Faisal bin Farhan is set to travel to Damascus soon to hand President Assad a formal invitation to attend the summit scheduled for May 19. From a different perspective, Israel sees its existence in tatters ever since Iran and Saudi Arabia decided to normalize ties. That could significantly be one of the most reasons behind an increase in the number of attacks against Syria. All in all, what seems to be of high significance is that Israel and its longtime ally, the United States, see no other option but to weaken the government in Damascus by any means, be it by pounding Syria with missiles and rockets or maintaining presence in the Arab country to plunder the country's oil riches. All can be considered as the West's attempts to keep Damascus in isolation, something which has so far proven to be otherwise.
The Kremlin says the killing of a well-known war blogger who backed the war in Ukraine was a terrorist act. The Kremlin blames Ukraine security services for conducting the attack. Russia has detained a woman in connection with the Sunday bombing in St. Petersburg that killed the blogger. Russia's Interior Ministry has confirmed arresting a suspect identified as Daria Trapova.
As a result of investigations carried out by police personnel in cooperation with the Regional Federal Security Service Department in St. Petersburg, Daria Trapova was detained in a rented apartment on suspicion of participating in an explosion on the premises of a cafe in Building 25 University Embankment, as a result of which the war correspondent Vladlen Tatarsky was killed.
The Russian Interior Ministry had published a video of the woman who took a statuette rigged with an explosive device to the cafe. The blast is the second assassination in Russia of a figure associated with the Ukraine war. Last August, the daughter of an ultranationalist was killed in a car bombing near Moscow. Russia has blamed Ukraine for that incident as well. Our correspondent Marina Kortonova joined us earlier from Moscow to tell us more about these new findings.
On Sunday evening, law enforcement agents searched Trepova's flat in St. Petersburg, where her mother and her sister were interrogated. According to preliminary reports, it was Trepova who handed Tatarsky a statuette stuffed with explosives. She was later wanted by the police. And the murder of war reporter Vladlen Tatarsky is a terrorist act. What Russia is facing is the Kyiv regime. And this is a regime that supports terrorist actions, which is responsible for the murder of Daria Dugina, a regime which quite possibly is behind this murder and behind the terrorist attack in St. Petersburg, which is responsible for the murder of people for many years, since 2014, Kremlin spokesperson said. And according to the National Anti-Terrorism Committee statement, the attack was planned by the Ukrainian special services, as well as agents collaborating with Alexei Navalny's anti-corruption foundation, FBK, so-called FBK, recognized as a foreign agent and an extremist organization. So this girl, the suspected in the Tatarsky case, is a 26 years old St. Petersburg native.
Ukraine says its army still holds control of the flashpoint city of Bakhmut despite Russian claims of capturing it. The general staff of the armed forces of Ukraine says Ukrainian defenders are repelling attacks on Bakhmut. This comes after Russia's private military company Wagner said that its forces have captured the strategic city in what it called a legal sense. The fight for Bakhmut has been the longest and bloodiest battle of the Russia-Ukraine war. Seizure of the area brings Russia closer to full control of Donetsk region in eastern Ukraine. Kiev also sees the battle of the industrial city as key to holding back Russian forces along the entire eastern front. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has announced that Finland will join the U.S.-led military alliance on Tuesday.
Tomorrow we will welcome Finland as the 31st member of NATO, making Finland safer and our alliance stronger. We will raise the Finnish flag for the first time here at the NATO headquarters.
In response to the announcement, Russia's deputy foreign minister said his country would strengthen its military capacity in its western and northwestern regions. Finland, alongside Sweden, applied to join the alliance last year following the eruption of the war in Ukraine. The bids came despite Russia's warnings against the eastward expansion of NATO near its borders. Moscow has blamed NATO's policy for launching its military campaign in Ukraine. The war, which is in its second year, rages as NATO members continue to supply Kiev with weapons in defiance of Moscow's warning that it would just prolong the conflict. More strikes in Britain. This time, a UK passport office workers have launched a 5-week walkout as the country reels from an unprecedented cost of living crisis. The public and commercial services says more than 1,000 members are going to participate in the strike. The union has accused the British government of failing to hold any meaningful talks with the public sector workers. The unions want talks about pay, jobs, pensions and working conditions. Meanwhile, British teachers have overwhelmingly voted to take 2 further days of strike action on April 27th and May the 2nd. The UK has seen a wave of strikes across various public sectors in recent months, with workers demanding inflation-matching pay rises. The country's inflation hit a 40-year high of more than 11% in October. Our correspondent Robert Carter joined us earlier from London and told us how the UK government is trying to tame the strikes.
The government, again, is saying that there isn't enough money in the coffers and that they cannot continue to keep negotiating and giving away money like they're being demanded to do so from so many different unions now. But the fact of the matter is that they're just not resolving any of these disputes. There have been countless strike actions from different sectors, ranging from public transport, buses, teachers, the passport office now, that's a new one, and many others. And the fact of the matter is that the government is just not dealing with it. And the Conservatives are the party apparently with the reputation of managing money properly, of dealing with unions and with industrial action effectively. And on both accounts, it appears that they're not actually honouring the reputation that they claim to have. So more strike action on the horizon, well into 2023, and it's quite likely that other unions will see the pressure that the government's under and will likely try to push ahead with their own high demands and follow it up with their own strike action. So the government is in a real rut here, and it doesn't seem as if there is any sign of them being able to dig themselves out of it in the near future. So lots more strike action to come in the UK, I'm sure.
Oil prices have soared after major producers agreed to cut production by around 1.2 million barrels of crude a day. The move has led to a 7% rise in key benchmarks. Under the agreement by the so-called OPEC Plus, Saudi Arabia will implement the largest cuts with 500,000 barrels. The country will be followed by Iraq, the United Arab Emirates, and Kuwait in terms of the scale of drops in output. The top producers say the reduction is a precautionary measure to support the stability of the global oil market. The cutback is the largest by the so-called OPEC Plus countries since October, comes as a surprise step after OPEC Plus earlier said that it will not change their production policies.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
The U.S. invaded Iraq back in 2003 under the false pretext of WMDs. That was a lie that was sold to the world at the time. Iraq's sovereignty was violated, but to this day, Iraq remains hostage to the U.S. in another way. The revenues that it earns from its oil sales are controlled by the U.S., and the U.S. can, at its whim, turn the faucet on and off on Iraq if Iraq doesn't heed to U.S.'s demands. Hi, I'm Kavit Avway. Welcome to Economic Divide. Some of the headlines coming up in this program: Iraqi oil revenues restricted by the U.S. in terms of its deposits. Forced deposits in the U.S. is what the U.S. has done. Iraq can't open oil accounts outside of the U.S. We're going to take a close look at that. Then comes the Iraqi exchange rate fluctuation. The dinar has been devalued against the dollar. That obviously impacts the economy and the price of goods. One of the other impacts, it results in social turmoil in Iraq. Is that a U.S. goal? We're going to take a look at that. Then, of course, the U.S. goal in dollar restrictions, a number of reasons, restriction of flow of dollars from Iraq to, let's say, Lebanon. That's one of the things that it happens, impacting Iran's economy, a focus of the U.S., and then the dollar dependence, detrimental for the economy.
The U.S. and its allies invaded Iraq back in 2003 under the false pretext that Iraq's former dictator, Saddam Hussein, possessed weapons of mass destruction. The invasion proved disastrous for Iraq. The U.S. destroyed Iraq's infrastructure. The invasion and the subsequent chaos and turmoil also killed hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq. Apart from geopolitical reasons, including creating the so-called Greater Middle East, which was aimed at supporting the Israeli regime, the U.S. also coveted Iraq's vast oil and gas resources. For years, the U.S. plundered Iraq's resources and made the country dependent to itself through its currency, the dollar. Since 2003, all Iraqi oil revenues have been paid into an account with the U.S. Federal Reserve. After the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq in 2003, Iraqis formed a sovereign government there, but the country is still restricted from opening accounts for its oil earnings outside of the U.S. Iraq's central bank funds are deposited in multiple accounts, amounting to about $99 billion deposited in central banks in a number of countries, in securities, in international banks, in addition to about $7.3 billion in physical gold in Iraq and abroad. But Washington has the ability to control all the funds of Iraq's central bank through threats or sanctions.
Time now for the social media post for this program. The first entry is actually an inspiration for this program, for the topic of this program. This particular website, titled "The U.S. Holds Iraq Hostage with the Dollar," went to say that since 2003, Iraq is required to send all of its oil revenues to a single U.S. bank account. Washington is now weaponizing Baghdad's own dollars against Iraq by devaluing its currency and hindering payments. Next up, this particular entry, which is also a website, proves how the previous one holds true. It said that the U.S. holds $50 billion of Iraq's financial services hostage. Now, this was back in June 6 of 2008, where the Independent of London reported that the U.S. was holding hostage some $50 billion of Iraq's money in the Federal Reserve Bank of New York to pressure the Iraqi government into signing an agreement to prolong the U.S. occupation indefinitely. Then, this is new news since the recording of this program. It came, we figured we put it in, where Iraq has ditched the U.S. dollar. That's right, it has adopted the Chinese yuan. The U.S. to send troops back to Iraq. We don't know if that's true or not in terms of it being factual. Then on to the next entry, which is also a website, Iraq reportedly to pay in yuan for imports from China, highlighting yuan's growing role, where it said Iraq has announced that it will finance its imports from China in yuan for the first time, a move aimed at coping with the dollar shortage and seen as a potential step for the internationalization of the Chinese currency. And finally, anyone would like to know why the U.S. invaded Iraq? Not because Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, because Saddam wanted to dump the U.S. dollar and to trade and sell his oil in gold. There you have it. Those were the entries we picked. Let's bring in our guests for this edition of the program. Joining us first is Stanley Esrall. Stanley Esrall is an organizer, researcher at the La Roche Movement. Stanley Esrall, welcome to Economic Divide. Since 2003, all of Iraqi oil revenues, as we came up with our research, has been paid into an account with the U.S. Federal Reserve. Now, although Iraq actually formed a sovereign government after the U.S. occupation, although it took some time, why is it that Iraq is still required to do that? I mean, basically, it's restricted from opening accounts for its oil earnings outside of the U.S. Doesn't that give the U.S. control over Iraq?
It absolutely gives U.S. control over Iraq. Hopefully, we will break through of this before very long. This is, for anybody who knows the history between the United States and Iraq, going back to the bombing that killed, in the least hundreds of thousands of Iraqis in the course of the warfare, probably 1 million Iraqis, done on the basis of the false information that Saddam Hussein had developed weapons of mass destruction, which there never was any before. And we all know at this point that at the point the UN was told there was, at the point Colin Powell, the Secretary of the State at that time, went, he knew that he was lying. And yet a million Iraqis were killed. And the head of state of Iraq, who did a lot to develop and modernize Iraq, was murdered. So the idea that they are now co-opting U.S. dollars is something, one, the United States has done to Afghanistan. It's something that they have done to China. China, fortunately, has a lot more money, so they're not as hurt by it as some people are. It's the kind of thing that they have done to Syria. So what we're in is a state where, from this, my standpoint as an American and an American patriot, is that we have had a series of administrations who have gone totally wild and who somehow think that they can kill a million people in a country and then turn around and say that they have to punish them for what?
Okay, thank you for that. Let's bring in our next guest. Saad al-Mutalibi joins us. He's from the State of the Law Coalition. Saad al-Mutalibi, welcome to Economic Divide. Every time you have a fluctuation in the exchange of the Iraqi dinar against the dollar, you have obviously not only the financial ramifications, but also the way that that impacts the society of that country, in this case, Iraq. Based on the way that the Iraqi economy is suffering because of this, we're looking at how this is causing a turmoil within the Iraqis and how Iraqis are suffering economically. What do you think are the U.S. goals behind its moves on Iraqi dollar revenues?
Well, the Americans have a plan, it seems, within the Middle East, the wider area of the Middle East, controlling the flow of United States dollars. And the restrictions they have put on Iraq in sending dollars or receiving. It's obvious that it is within an American plan on controlling the finances of the Middle East. We cannot send or receive any money without the approval from New York, Manhattan Bank or something like that, where every fund, every cent Iraqi needs to send for imports of goods or purchasing of services have to go through the United States, and from the United States is to be approved. Therefore, there is a control, a very clear control, American control, on the expenditure of Iraqi dollars for whatever reason. That's obviously, there is a reason to stop funds getting into Iran, Syria, and Lebanon, and Yemen, countries that are fighting for their independence, fighting their for rights to survive in the Middle East.
It's time now for the Infinews section of the program. We pick four items from wherever part of the world you may be in, hopefully, and review it here in this segment. First up, we're going to take a look at the payment system that's been established between two countries, namely Cuba and Russia. Cuba has accepted the Russian payment system at its ATMs, believe it or not, in the capital, Havana. Now, these ATMs actually allow cash withdrawals in pesos, and it uses the Mir cards from Russia that's issued in that country. So it shows how advanced the relationship between these two countries have become. The U.S. blocking Russian banks from SWIFT has actually led to Russia to promote the domestic system as a reliable alternative. Next up, we've covered this piece of news, but there's obviously lots of waves coming out of it. The Saudi-Iran détente, so to speak, and the newly established relationship, where Saudi Arabia actually now has said that it could invest in Iran very quickly after this agreement, where it said, quote, "We have no reason not to invest in Iran, and we have no reason not to allow them to invest in Saudi Arabia." That's according to the Saudi Finance Ministry. He added that it is in our interest to make sure that both nations benefit from each other's resources and competitive advantage. I'm sure we're going to get more news from this agreement that has occurred between the two countries. Next up, a contagion factor, in this case from the U.S. banking crisis, is occurring as we speak. The latest, the European bank stocks have sunk on the U.S. contagion fears. Now, taking a look at this international angle of it, Credit Suisse shares tanked, but it was given a $54 billion lifeline, so it was somewhat saved there. But there's still worries, like from the U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, who said, quote, "Everybody is concerned about the impact of Credit Suisse on the U.S. banking system." Next up, a headache for Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the protests in Israel. They're continuing. This is over 10 weeks now. They have reached an impasse, but there was, I guess, a withdrawal, which has been called a pause from the progress or to move ahead on the judicial reforms. But the latest was that you had about 500,000 to 700,000 demonstrators that went to the streets again, one of the largest demonstrations. You had the opposition leader, Jared Lapid, who said, quote, "A wave of terrorism is hitting us. Our economy is crashing. Money is flowing outwards." And he also said Iran just signed a new agreement with Saudi Arabia, but the only thing this administration cares about is crushing the so-called Israel democracy, which many believe doesn't exist on occupied lands. Those were the four topics that we picked.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for the in-depth section of the program. Now, in this section, the whole issue at hand, which is what we're going to cover, is how the U.S. is involved in the money that Iraq generates from its oil sales. Okay, first up, Iraq is required to send all of its oil revenues to a single U.S. bank account. Now, why does the U.S. control Iraq's dollars? Well, the Iraqis formed a sovereign government after the U.S. invasion and occupation of their country. Iraq is still restricted from opening accounts for its oil earnings outside of the U.S. Next, the U.S. Federal Reserve. Well, that's the entity that has imposed strict measures on Iraqi banks under various pretexts. One of them is preventing smuggling, it says, to countries like Iran, Syria, and Lebanon. The other, money laundering, just to name a few. We could take a look also at fraud and corruption that it has cited. Now, as a result, the U.S. Treasury Department has sanctioned 19 Iraqi banks. It has allowed 23 banks to remain operating as clients of the so-called currency window in the Iraqi Central Bank. But notice the first one, which is the most important one. Next up, we're going to take a look at the ripple effect here. This measure has caused a decrease in the central bank's deposit of dollars by about 40% in terms of the deposits in the Iraqi Central Bank, which has led to a decline in supply and therefore then a surge in demand. Now, this has resulted in an increase in the price of the dollar from 1,460 dinars, which was the official rate, to 640 dinars overnight in one case. Now, remember, this is from Iraq's own oil revenues. Iraq's oil funds, which, due to the 2022 global oil price hike, is now close to $100 billion. And that is why it is said that Washington is weaponizing Baghdad's own dollars against Iraq. And as a result, it has devalued Iraq's currency and therefore hindering payments that Iraq can make. Let's find out what our guest thinks. Stanley Ezrall rejoins us. He's an organizer and researcher at the LaRouche Movement. Stanley Ezrall, welcome back to Economic Divide. Now, one of the stated goals that the U.S. has said behind this move to restrict the flow of dollars to countries like Iran, Syria, and Lebanon, for example, out of Iraq is because it wants to control the flow of Iraqi dollars. But doesn't that mean that Iraq's dollar dependence, in a sense, then, is detrimental to its own economy when the U.S. Acts this way?
Everything that's being done about the treatment of the dollar, both domestically and internationally, is evidence that anybody would be a fool to trust their wealth in dollars.
Okay, that's right to the point there. Let's find out what our next guest thinks, Saad Al-Mutallabi, if he agrees with that, from State of the Law Coalition. Saad Al-Mutallabi, welcome back. Taking a look at the way that the U.S. wants to control the flow of dollars, obviously one of the stated goals that it doesn't really say that that's really what it is to control the flow of dollars out of Iraq into its neighbors, such as Iran and such as Syria, for example. But doesn't that then mean that dollar dependence is not a good thing for a country, in this case, Iraq?
Well, the problem is that Iraq has, we have a trade relationship with the Middle Eastern countries, i.e. Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Emirates, Turkey, all these countries we have a relationship with, and trade relations and trade balances with this country. So it is very natural and normal that there will be exchange of dollars through these countries with Iraq. But the Americans are trying to restrict that. These countries, in particular Iran, Yemen, Syria, and Lebanon, to deprive these countries of any international funds. Yes.
The U.S. has now decided to implement strict financial measures in a bid to allegedly combat corruption in Iraq. For months, the U.S. has restricted Iraq's access to its own dollars. The Central Bank of Iraq requests dollars from the Fed and then sells them to commercial banks and exchange houses at the official exchange rate through a mechanism known as the dollar auction. In the past, daily sales through the auction often exceeded $200 million per day. But U.S. officials now claim the system has been used to transfer money to countries like Syria, Iran, and even Lebanon, which are under illegal U.S. sanctions. It's alleged that 80% of the dollars sold through the auction has gone to neighboring countries. The U.S. has now forced Iraq's central bank to use an electronic system for transfers that required entering detailed information on the intended and recipients of the requested dollars. U.S. officials are said to have trained 100 Iraqi central bank employees to implement the new system. Now, this system has started rejecting transfers and invoices that used to be approved by the central bank. It is now reported that the amount of dollars sold daily in the auction plummeted to nearly $70 million U.S. dollars in January, compared to nearly $260 million 6 months earlier.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apossian. Today, I want to talk about a growing trend of central banks dumping the US dollar. According to the IMF, the US dollar share of global foreign exchange reserves has dropped to a 25-year low. This graph shows that the share of US dollar assets in central bank reserves dropped by 12 percentage points from 71 to 59%. So, how much money are we talking about? foreign currency reserves worldwide shrank 10% in the first 9 months of last year. The global total dropped to $11.6 trillion at the end of September 2022, falling below $12 trillion for the first time since March 2020. That's according to the International Monetary Fund. There are some surprises when it comes to central banks decreasing their dollar reserves. One of them came from Washington's staunchest ally, Israel. For the first time ever, Israel's central bank said it would add the Chinese yuan while slashing its dollar and euro holdings. The explanation given: a move to diversify its reserve allocations and lengthen its investment horizon. The other surprise came from China. The country's president, Xi Jinping, while on a trip to Saudi Arabia, said it would require payments from Saudi Arabian oil sales to be made in yuan instead of US dollars. This would also include other Persian Gulf countries as well. Major foreign policy blunders by Western countries, in particular the US, have forced countries around the globe to think twice about having US dollar reserves. The UK freezing Venezuela's gold, the US freezing $7 billion in Afghanistan's assets, and the icebreaker, the US freezing the Russian central bank's assets worth $300 billion, are just some examples. In the case of Russia, analysts have said that US sanctions on Russia's central bank have undermined the US dollar for good. If central bank assets are no longer safe, then countries, especially China, could finally be pushed into dumping reserve dollars and cutting dollar reliance in trade, finance, and banking. That does it for this segment of the program. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in touch with us.
The dollar has definitely lost its popularity with central banks. Now, as Matthew mentioned in the quick take section, when a government like the U.S. can reach into the coffers of the central bank of another country and then freeze its assets because it's not following the U.S. foreign policy agenda, then those countries will think twice about whether they're going to hold on to their dollars or not, which the trend is that they're going to let go of it and switch into another currency. That does it for this edition of the program. Hope you liked it. I thought it was okay, but your opinion obviously matters more to us. Thanks again for being with us. From the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's bye-bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another special edition of the program The Ocean of Dua. In this special edition during the holy month of Ramadan, We will be having a look at different parts of the supplication Abu Hamza Sumali. We will be bringing you different commentaries on some parts of this dua. We'll be back after you listen to these parts.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا مولاي بذكرك عاش قلبي وبمناجاتك بردت ألم الخوف عني فيا مولاي ويا مؤملي ويا منتهى سؤلي فرق بيني وبين الذنب المانع لي من لزوم طاعتك فإنما أسألك لقديم الرجاء فيك وعظيم الطمع منك الذي أوجبته على نفسك من الرأفة والرحمة.
Dear brothers and sisters, we have reached this part of the supplication of Abu Hamza Thumali. Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika asha qalbi. O my master, in your remembrance my heart takes delight. Wa bimunajatika barratu alam al-khawfi anni. And through prayers I hold communion with you, easing the pain of fear that torments me. Regarding this part, dear listeners, we mentioned that the essence of Allah's remembrance is dhikr, and a remembrance of Allah is behind all religious obligations and even our recommended acts. And the spirit of all these is to remember Almighty Allah. And that's why the Holy Quran states, أَقِمِ الصَّلَاةَ لِذِكْرِ. The highest form of ritual prayer, the highest form of worship, is for the remembrance of the Almighty Allah. Now, we also concluded in the previous episode that the only factor that can give tranquility and peace of mind to a person living in this hectic world, in the world of anxieties, is remembrance of Allah. Because the Holy Quran says, أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَطْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبِ. The hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance. Those who truly remember Allah, and in whose souls His remembrance is deeply rooted, are so calm and tranquil. You may have seen them, you may have had communications with them. Those are so calm that no event can make them anxious and agitated. In our time, we have had many people who were the examples of such personalities. Traditions have likened the believer to a mountain. Traditions have described the true mu'min as stronger than even a mountain. It is because storms may make stones on top of the mountain roll down, but the hurricane of events can never weaken the faith of a believer, just like the state of mountain that never moves. الْمُؤْمِنُ كَالْجَبَلِ الرَّاسِخِ لَا تُحَرِّكُهُ الْعَوَاسِفِ. The believer is like a mountain that cannot be shaken by the winds. Why? Because of the state of his heart. Because his heart is connected to something that cannot be shaken. Because his heart is connected to something that cannot be transformed, cannot be extinguished. So, in addition to eternal felicity, remembrance of Allah is what gives peace of mind in this world, which in itself is a blessing beyond description.
Ramadan, 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 Ramadan.
the ocean of dua.
Dear listeners, about this state of qalb, about this remembrance of the Almighty Allah, in the Holy Quran, we see that God uses an excellent expression which is worthy of reflection. He says, فَذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرْكُمْ وَشْكُرُوا لِي وَلَا تَكْفُرُوا. Remember me, and I will remember you. What does this expression mean? فَذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرْكُمْ. Remember me, and I will remember you. Why do we have to reflect upon this part of the verse? Because we need to understand what Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says. Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika aasha qalbi. How do we make our hearts take delight by remembrance of Allah? What is the practical meaning of remembrance of the Almighty Allah? Now, when Quran says, فَذْكُرُونِ يَذْكُرْكُمْ, this expression can be analyzed in different ways according to different views and levels of understanding. Of course, God is aware of everyone and everything at every moment. وَمَا رَبُّكَ بِغَافِلٍ عَمَّا تَعْمَلُونَ وَمَا كَانَ رَبُّكَ نَسِيَّ. And your Lord is not forgetful. But Allah has perfect knowledge of the past, present, and future. So it is clear, having these verses in our mind, that when God says, remember me and I will remember you, it doesn't mean that you will cause yourself to be reminded by me as your God. No, of course, God is having perfect knowledge of the past, present, and future. Nothing is hidden from him. So when God says, remember me and I will remember you, this remembrance is something else. It is a special remembrance of God towards his servants and true friends, towards awliya. It does not refer to his general attention towards all creatures, because all creation are receiving his attention at the same time simultaneously. He is the creator, and if he even stops paying attention to even one of them for even a second, they will be totally destroyed. But this remembrance that God says, فَذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرْكُمْ, is something else. In interpreting this verse, we will try to have a look at different traditions and try to understand what the true meaning of remembrance of the Almighty Allah is in the next episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you throughout my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or Band 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.